There are moments in your career where you wonder why you do this to yourself. This is one of those moments for me. But I'm very pleased, I'm delighted actually, that John Humphries is with us today to guide us through the rest of the morning. He's just jolly famous, so I don't need to say a great deal about him. There's the Today programme, there's the 9 o'clock news on the record, on the ropes, which I'm just about to experience, Panorama. He's won many national awards, he chairs Mastermind. And he's been accused by at least one leading politician of poisoning the well of democratic debate. I'm sure we're not going to get into any of that now.
That was Jonathan Aitken, I have to tell you.
Indeed. But as I assume the role of victim, let me hand over to John Humphries. John,
thank you, Tim. I'm glad you mentioned Mastermind, because mostly, as you may know, I've been interviewing politicians for about the last 450 years, And it's wonderful to be doing a programme where people actually want to answer the question. complete shock to the system. Having said it, which you do get some slightly bizarre ones, we do the celebrity mastermind thing at Christmas, and the contenders are chosen not, how can I put this kindly, not necessarily for their intellect, rather for their fame, and therefore we're a little easier with the questions, we're a little more generous, so we ask them the odd easy one together. We ask, I'll test you. Since you're, some of you, school teachers, I will test you. First question, it's coming up at Christmas. First question of the soap star was, what breakfast cereal do you associate with prison?
Porridge.
Yeah, you know what he said? Cheerios.
He was a banker, wasn't he?
could have been a brilliant post-ironic comment on the government's penal policy, of course, but I rather doubt that. Anyway, look, great to be here. And Tim, obviously, wonderful to listen to those inspiring stories. But let me be a little bit sceptical, if not cynical, and you know that we journalists obey only one law, and that is... First simplify, then exaggerate. And what you weren't meant to laugh at that, actually. But what you're telling us, what you've told us very, very effectively this morning, a lot of people have told us, is that if you have wonderful new buildings and if you have wonderful teachers, you will have very happy and very successful students. Well, I kind of think I knew that. And have always known that, and so has everybody else. What's new?
What's new, I think, is that the government is making a commitment to do this right across the country, to do so in a way that is isn't a kind of one-size-fits-all approach. Here's the template and everyone's got to do it, sort of Monty Python approach. You accused me of showing my age last time I mentioned that to you. But the whole idea about this is to be bold about breaking some of the cycles, the repetitive cycles, which we see about under achievement, under aspiration, under delivery, that are very serious issues across the country. What this gives us an opportunity to do, building schools of the future is a key part of it. It's not the only part of it, as I said earlier on. There isn't a silver bullet to change all of this stuff. It's to be a key ingredient with wider facilities, with ICT, with changes in teaching practice, sometimes changing... leadership, engagement of young people in the process of design as well as of learning, and of parents in the process of managing schools and being engaged in that process much more, part of a sustained package of measures to actually make a difference. And I really believe we can make a difference. I wouldn't be doing this job if I didn't.
And every politician I've talked to for the last 30 years has told me, I believe, not that I'm accusing you of being a politician.
Thank you, most kindly.
Instantly withdraw that. but has said much the same thing, using different language and possibly different acronyms. I must say, you do have a lot of acronyms, don't you? And initialisms, just to prove that, you know, I did go to school as well, but only very briefly and not very successfully. The fact is, there are 3,500 schools, including academies, secondary schools in this country. You've built, what is it now? 35?
We've got 35 gone now.
35? Mm. You've got an awfully long way to go, and that might not matter if you said time is not of the essence, but of course time is of the essence, and the fact is, when you look at some of the schools you have tried to build, you have suffered dreadful delays. I don't want to pick one. Well, I will pick one out. Greenwich, for instance. 3 years and haven't laid a brick yet. It's ambitious. You talk a good talk, but so far, you haven't delivered.
I want to argue we are delivering. Certainly there has been...
35 schools?
Certainly there's been delays on the original plan for BSF. In the last 20, 21 months, we've seen a huge turnaround from one deal being concluded to now 22. We've got 35 schools open. Next year, there'll be another, more than 100. It takes you 18 months to build a school once you've got it designed and you've got the deal sorted.
So we're talking about thousands of schools.
There is an enormous pipeline underway already. There are 1,000 schools somewhere between design and delivery in BSF right now. So it is a huge endeavour, and it's not something which we're all doing ourselves. It is about creating an effective partnership, locating that in a broader sense of strategy and purpose, which is owned by the local authorities, and setting up a delivery mechanism that isn't all done by partnerships for schools. It's established with the private sector, with local government, with involvement from Building Schools for the Future Investments Limited and ourselves in making sure that this actually gets delivered. There's an enormous leverage involved here. But the aspiration is high. We do believe we can make a big difference if we get this right. And the rigour we need to apply is to learn the lessons of what's working and make sure that we tune that through time.
Quality. You talk about quality, and we've seen some fantastic schools. What you didn't tell us, or what nobody has told us this morning, as far as I'm listening to it, is that the government's own independent design watchdog gave you a bit of a kicking earlier this year. There are schools being built that simply aren't up to scratch. Why? Given that it's your responsibility.
Yeah, well, avoiding acronyms and initials from it. Yes, the Commission for Architecture and the Built Environment have been taking a look at designs in Building Schools for the Future and outside it. These are schemes, these are not schemes built, these are schemes in the process of being designed, including those in competition. So of the number that they looked at, 22 odd schools they looked at, 14 were projects in competition in Building Schools for the Future. And it's true to say that there were some that weren't as good as we would like to see. Nine have won design awards, however. So let's get the balance right. Yeah, there are some that are not as good, but there are the majority of the BSF schools actually have won design awards. So there is some very good stuff going on. But I don't want to say everything's perfect. It isn't. We want to make sure that design quality is embedded and does that process continues to improve. We're designing for flexibility. We've heard about that from David already. And we're designing buildings, environments in a different way than has been done previously. So we want to push the boundaries. We are in a mode that is actively seeking to do that, and we're seeing some very interesting examples. We're also seeing some that, right at the very earliest stage, frankly, I think we should put in the bin and start again.
And is that what you're doing?
That's what we're in deep discussion about. We can't announce that today, but we can announce a commitment to that. We want to get to a minimum design standard for Building Schools of the Future.
Well, I'm not sure what commitment you're reluctant to make. I mean, it should be obvious that if you're going to carry out or deliver on all the undertakings that you've been talking about this morning, that if you come across a design that is substandard, you'll say you can't do that.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. The question
is... you want to do it. Can you do it? Do you have the power
to
do it?
Yeah, I think we can. I think we can do that.
It involves certain.
Well, I'm getting certain. What I want to avoid, let me just be clear, what I want to avoid is a set of subjective, one group of people saying, I don't like that design, it's not good enough, into a model which is about what objective measures can we use that stand up to scrutiny, external scrutiny, that this building is fit for purpose or it isn't. And that's not simply a design question, it's also an education question. We want to engage people who are involved in the business of delivering teaching as part of that process. They're not at the moment.
Yeah.
But we're close to an agreement with CABE for that design review process to include people who do have experience in education, who are working from the inside out, as it were, as well as those who work from the outside in, to come up with a set of measures that are objective, where we can all say, yes, that's one that we can keep working on,
but
no, that isn't.
Isn't objective a slightly misleading use of that word? You can't be objective, can you? Because one teacher, one head teacher, one architect's idea of what is the ideal school may be very different indeed from another. I mean, some of the schools we saw this morning were wonderful. Other people might say, you know, like them.
But there are some objective things that you can measure in terms of, have you got the right sizes of space for the task? That's an objective measure.
It's fairly straightforward, but that's not design.
You would be surprised. We've seen some early designs that frankly haven't taken that into account. Another thing that you have to look at is about the safety and the protection of young people in a site. If you have unfettered access from six different accesses that are unmanaged, that is a problem. We've seen designs coming forward with those kind of characteristics. So there are some measures that are themselves entirely objective that we can apply to this process, and some others that are to do with judgment. And what we want to do is to get a sensible system, which is why we're not rushing into it. But the idea of making sure, and I think by the end of this year we will be sure that we've got a set of measures we can stand on, and say, below this standard we will not go, and we want to keep raising that bar as we learn more about what's effective.
Talk about money. £3 million to do a procurement. You can hire a few decent teachers for £3 million, can't you?
You can indeed. You've got to look at the scale of the procurement here. If I take the example of Kent, Graham Babin here from Kent, the overall Building Schools for the Future programme in Kent is £1.5 billion pounds. If you and I are buying a house or getting into some serious bit of procurement, you need the right advice and you need to make sure that what you're doing is sensible. So it's about a proportionate level of investment in the procurement. This is procuring something that's going to transform education for a generation, and we need to get that as right as we can.
So what percentage of the capital cost of the building is taken up with the procurement?
Of the overall transaction, it could be getting on for 3%.
It's quite a lot, isn't it?
It is quite a lot. It's actually quite a lot cheaper than the alternatives. Straight PFI, multiple PFI procurements. Is this a cost-effective way of doing it? The answer is it is cost-effective compared to the alternatives.
Well, are you saying, because let's turn to PFI briefly, PFI has failed, hasn't it? It's been a rip-off. The taxpayer has been ripped off.
Yeah, well, James Stewart's here.
There may be one or two people in this room who won't agree with that, but...
I've been quite an outspoken critic of PFI in the past. What we've got here with local education partnerships is a system that for the first time brings together the business commercial objectives of the private sector partner with the client, with the local authority. It's in the business interests of the provider to make sure that changes, flexibility is done cost effectively and rapidly. And if that isn't the case, then the exclusive deal that is given to ALEP for that 10-year period is in jeopardy. And what we're, rather than sort of £5,000 to change a light bulb, what we're seeing is a response from the market that is tuned to that. This is about trying to establish a partnership that recognises the operating needs of a school will change through time, and allowing for that in the life of the project, not having the kind of system that is the caricature of PFI. So this is a new generation. It's geared in a different way. And for the first time, you can see quite explicitly why those objectives of both participants are actually aligned. And it's working. Every single one of our local education partnerships that's operational has delivered its value for money improvements year on year so far. So the early signs are good, but they are still early.
I think the answer to my question, PFI has failed, was yes, then.
Answer your own question. Yes. My answer was the one I just gave you.
now you are sounding like a politician. That's really, in a minute you're going to say to me, I think the question you really should be asking is...
Yeah, well, I've been studying how to deal with it.
Yeah, well, don't listen to Paxman. He doesn't know. This question about going back to procurement, saying to a teacher, now, you know, £25 billion procurement. Teacher says, I'm sorry, I'm the head teacher. I've got a school to run. I mean, how can they do both?
Yeah, well, that's a real issue. And one of the reasons I think government has adjusted this kind of single gateway approach is helping us manage with the National College of School Leadership and many of our leading head teachers engaged in that programme. We want to equip head teachers to do this. Often, they select a member of the team. I mean, Heather's somebody from Allerton who, as the deputy head, was pretty much full-time on developing the new school. We need to make sure that the resources are there in the school in order to help develop it. But the alternative of saying, well, you know, here's a school we're going to do to you, is not an acceptable alternative either. So what we want to do is to try and get the balance right. And it's a difficult one to find between engaging pupils and students in the process of design and delivery, engaging the people who are actually going to use it, the professionals in that process, but not to overload them. And that's why we're encouraging every authority to have a serving head teacher full-time involved in the leadership of their Building Schools for the Future project for the authority as a whole, as well as creating the space not just for the head teacher, but actually the management team of the school. Because one of our early lessons is that head teachers can come in, put a lot of energy into a new school and then retire or go off somewhere else and you get a non-invented here problem. So what we're wanting to do is to have something that is owned as a design, as a means of attacking these issues right across the school community and right across the wider community who want to use these facilities as the centrepiece of a more general regeneration in many areas in the country. And we're starting to see some real traction behind that, but it is a challenge.
It's a challenge, as you say. The other challenge is just... Let's finish on the question of money. It's, you've got £45 billion. I mean, give or take, which is, yeah. Well, come on, these days, 45 billion, you know, one of these bloody City Barrow boys can lose that in a fortnight, I mean. or steal it, perhaps, in a fortnight. I'm not sure which of that. 45 billion, as it happens, exactly what it took to bail out AIG. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a lot of money, except that today, in this climate, it is a lot of money. It's a huge amount of money. And I wonder whether you're underplaying the effect, the long-term effect, of the credit crunch.
Well, it will remain to be seen. Certainly the credit crunch is a big and, I think, wide-ranging issue into the future. What we've got is a commitment from this government to rebuild or renew every secondary school. We've got a government that's wanting to look more intelligently at the ways in which its various funding streams can be joined up more strategically rather than distributed by formulae all around the country. And we're seeing the Department for Children, School and Families starting to think hard about that. So more efficient use of resources as well as a commitment to doing the overall job. But there's no doubt that the challenge ahead is a big one. What we've got is a clear commitment for this next spending review period, which is a long time in politics, and we're working on the next spending review period. What we need to do is to make sure that the investment that we're making make a transformational difference and keep on going to the areas that need it most. That's what we're concentrating on. Ultimately, the overall resource element envelope for building schools of the future is a matter for politicians in spending reviews to come. What we've got, though, is a firm commitment for the foreseeable future.
And where will you be in 10 years? I don't mean where you necessarily personally will be in 10 years from now. You may be in government, who knows? 10 years from now, where will it be?
I think building schools of the future will be seriously embedded. We will see, we will have...
You mean it's not already?
Well, it's getting there, but it's not, you know, we've got 35 schools out of 3,500 open. I'm expecting us to be concentrating on making sure that trajectory of improvement, that breaking of the recurrent cycle that we were talking about earlier on, is sustained. And that we've moved with the times of the changing way in which teaching is delivered and learning is received. There's a big difference between an engaged teenager, I can speak as a father of teenagers myself, and one who isn't. If you create an environment that gets them to grasp the learning opportunity, and that means in different ways, then you get the kind of transformation we're talking about. What we don't want is a by rote system of delivery that makes everything look the same. We don't want a grey solution. We want one that is actually tuned to the different circumstances locally, but where we've got a whole set of measures that are objective to demonstrate that this approach works and is transforming the workforce for the future.
I noticed you didn't say how many schools you'd have built.
And we'll be substantially underway by then, John.
Suitably vague. Can't hold you to that, can I? Thanks for that. We're going to have a break for coffee now, and when we come back we're going to have a panel session, so you'll hear some intelligent questions being asked then, I hope, and get some intelligent answers too. Thank you very much, and thank you, Tim.